Fasten your seatbelt and turn up the radio. We're going on a road trip. Happy New Year and welcome to our annual Route 51 Regional Talk Radio year-end review show. I'm Glenn Moberg, and for the next hour, we'll be looking at the top news stories and the people, the passion, the places, the politics, and the performances that made the year 2012 a year for the history books. We'll be revisiting some of the guests we brought you during our live broadcasts on Thursday afternoon and listening again to some of the memorable live musical moments that originated from our Wausau studios and taking you on the road to a variety of colorful stops along Route 51 as we listen again to some of our favorite stories. 2012 was above all a big political year with a national presidential election, a statewide U.S. Senate election, congressional elections, and of course the controversial recalls. Republican Governor Scott Walker won his recall election, defeating Democrat Tom Barrett for a second time in 2 years. The governor stopped by a Wausau factory shortly after his victory to announce a summit meeting over bratwursts, and we were there.
It won't all happen overnight, but I think my wife had a good idea. She said, everybody over for some brats and some burgers. I said, well, let's throw in a little bit of Wisconsin brewing. I think it'll be a good start.
With the intensity of the personal and political attacks that you've had to endure over the last year and a half, are you willing to forgive and forget?
Absolutely. And the reason for that is it doesn't matter what's been said in the past. It's what you do in the future. And I'm committed to doing that, not just for today, but for that next generation.
There was also a big recall election for North Central Wisconsin's 29th state Senate seat. Assembly Minority Leader Donna Seidel had thrown her hat in the ring against the incumbent freshman Republican Pam Galloway, only to be surprised when Galloway abruptly withdrew from the race. Galloway told us that she had no regrets signing Act 10, the law that stripped public unions of their collective bargaining rights and led to the recall elections.
Well, I don't think it was inappropriate to pass that bill. I think it helped the local communities balance their budget.
It just seems as an observer that all of these recalls could have been avoided if you hadn't done that. So you're saying again that you have no regrets.
No, I have no regrets whatever. Unfortunately, as a legislator, sometimes to accomplish your goals, you have to make those tough decisions. And I think that that's what the taxpayers expect us to do.
When Pam Galloway withdrew, veteran Republican Assemblyman Jerry Petruski stepped in. But first, Donna Seidel had to face a primary involving a fake Democratic candidate, James Buckley, a Tea Party conservative who didn't even live in the 29th Senate District. In one of the strangest Route 51 shows ever, James Buckley and Donna Seidel met in a live on-air debate, with Buckley accusing her of trying to form a communist one-world government.
Make decisions based upon common sense, solving problems without bloviating all day long and saying actually nothing.
Are you accusing Donna Seidel of bloviating?
You heard it, didn't you?
I certainly did. Donna?
I'm offended by that, Jim. I wish we would have discussed real issues that impact real people throughout the 29th district, but apparently you either don't care about those issues or aren't interested in looking at those.
Donna Seidel defeated James Buckley and then went on to face Jerry Petruski in the recall election. The two met in a boisterous live debate at the Center for Civic Engagement Theater in Wausau, sponsored by a coalition of local media groups that included Wisconsin Public Radio. The sparks flew when the two candidates were asked whether the Republican majority planned to pass a right-to-work law to strip private unions of their collective bargaining rights.
I don't believe that there is a plan to do that. I would vote no. And I don't believe that there is support to do it. We are partnered with a lot of unions in this state that are really working very hard to make sure that this state is the best that it can be.
This is really hard for me to digest, that we're partnering with unions after you assaulted the public unions and stripped away 50 years of collective bargaining.
On election night, it was Republican Jerry Petruski who emerged victorious, with the town of Stettin Republican ending Donna Seidel's many years in public office. Seidel consoled her followers at the Wausau Labor Temple, while Petruski met his supporters at a victory party in Rothschild, and we were there. Jerry Petruski only entered the race after recall target Pam Galloway resigned her Senate seat. Last night, he thanked a roomful of people who have backed him in the assembly for 14 years.
I'm not sure that anybody's ever run a 10-week Senate campaign, but we have.
Several miles away, Assistant Minority Leader Donna Seidel told a stunned group of supporters at the Wausau Labor Temple to keep fighting for health care, education, and women's rights.
And we need to continue to commit to those ideals and those values and those priorities.
Further north in the sprawling 12th Senate District, a general election race took place to replace retiring Democrat Jim Holprin, pitting Republican assemblyman and businessman Tom Tiffany against Democratic attorney Susan Summer and Libertarian geology instructor Paul Ellers. At a debate in Rhinelander, I asked the three candidates about their positions on plans for a big iron mine in the Pinocchio Hills south of Lake Superior, a mine that Summer opposed, Ellers questioned, and Tiffany supported.
Iron ore mining is completely different than sulfide mining. They use mechanical means to separate the ore from the rock. Sulfide mining, zinc, gold, others, they use chemicals to separate the ore from the rock. You've taken one of the major risk factors out of mining. So the bill we passed was very specific to iron ore.
If you are doing a ferrous mine, an iron mine, you don't have to be worried if you come across any type of a sulfide ore body that's part of it. The Tyler Formation up in the Pinocchio Range has pyrite in it. When pyrite is exposed to air and water, it causes acid mine drainage, which is sulfide pollution.
I agree with Mr. Tiffany that there are fewer problems with this type of an iron mine as opposed to a sulfide type mine. That said, I don't think we should carve out a niche. I think we do need encompassing mining laws.
Tom Tiffany went on to defeat Susan Summer and Paul Ellers in the 12th Senate District election. An interesting race developed in Wausau's 85th Assembly District. With Seidel out as the incumbent, conservative radio talk show host Pat Snyder threw his hat in the ring against schoolteacher and Democrat Mandy Wright and Libertarian Jim Moss. The three met in a Wisconsin public radio debate. They also met at a health care forum where they weighed in on the problem of alcoholism. Moss said he opposed stricter laws. Wright said she supported them. And Pat Snyder said he could speak from personal experience.
I am an alcoholic. I wrecked my motorcycle, got a DUI, and then was in the hospital for the next 2 weeks with a broken arm and broken leg.
As a teacher, I see how impulsive kids are every day, and we don't need to be adding alcohol into the mix.
The rest of the world has lower drinking ages or no drinking age at all, and somehow they are able to survive.
Democrat Mandy Wright won the 85th Assembly race, defeating Republican Pat Snyder and Libertarian Jim Moss. Our political coverage on Route 51 included an appearance by former Senate Majority Leader Russ Decker, who talked for the first time about his reasons for not supporting a public workers' contract in the days before Governor Walker took office. Decker's opponents accused him of seeking a favor from Governor Doyle in exchange for his vote. On Route 51, Decker said it wasn't true.
I didn't think they were going to strip collective bargaining rights. I knew they would go after them to pay more health care and retirement benefits, and the public employees agreed to that. But stripping collective bargaining really uses the arm of government, in contrary to what the Republicans are always saying, less government, more personal freedom.
You went to Governor Doyle and asked him to pardon your longtime friend Chuck Kuala.
That's not true.
And then you voted against the union contracts in retaliation.
That's something fabricated by someone. I can tell you this. Chuck Kuala and Jim Doyle are not pals.
You didn't ask Jim Doyle to do that?
Not at all.
Former Senate Majority Leader Russ Decker on Route 51. The local races served as a backdrop to the national elections and the race between President Barack Obama and Governor Mitt Romney. In north central Wisconsin, Romney did not make an appearance, but a strong conservative challenger to him did. Rick Santorum rallied his primary supporters at a rally in Weston.
Sign up. Help us out. If you do that and we pull off this upset here in Wisconsin, we will reset this race, not with an Etch-a-Sketch. We will reset it with conservative convictions, giving us the best chance to win this election and the best chance to restore that shining city on the hill. Thank you all very much, and God bless you. Thank you. Thank you.
Mitt Romney went on to defeat Rick Santorum in Wisconsin, paving the way for his nomination by the Republican Party. While President Barack Obama didn't visit north central Wisconsin, his most powerful and influential surrogate did, his wife Michelle. She spoke before an overflow crowd at the UW Marathon County Fieldhouse in Wausau with a message tailored for the young people in the audience.
Don't let anyone ever talk down your dreams. Don't let anybody ever talk you away from your aspirations. Don't let anybody talk down this country or the future of this country. Because we have every reason to be optimistic about what lies ahead. And we need our young people to believe that. We don't win when our kids don't feel good about their future. And you all have every reason to feel good. Because in America, we always move forward.
President Obama defeated Governor Romney in the general election, and in a result that surprised many, Democrat Tammy Baldwin defeated one of the most popular politicians in Wisconsin history, four-term Governor Tommy Thompson, to become the state's new U.S. Senator. The two met in a Wisconsin public television debate before a live audience in Wausau, and the sparks flew over the subject of Iran. Thompson accused Baldwin of supporting extremist groups. Baldwin accused Thompson of profiting from the country's effort to acquire uranium.
You have tens of thousands of dollars in investments in companies that do business with Iran, including a company that teams up with Iran doing uranium mining in Africa.
I heard about this stuff.
Who are you talking
about? I heard
about
the
you
council.
Can't even, you can't
Wait
take
a minute. Let me finish. Let me finish. You have 2 minutes. Let me finish. You want to interrupt me, Joe Biden? Just give me a chance.
The other big national election in our region was the race for the 7th congressional seat between freshman Republican Sean Duffy and his Democratic challenger, former state senator and television newsman Pat Kreitlow. On Route 51, we asked Kreitlow about whether Democrats were willing to push the U.S. economy over the fiscal cliff. We face a fiscal cliff, quote unquote, at the end of the year. Are Democrats threatening to go over it just in order to get Republicans to raise those top marginal income tax rates?
Well, again, I think that it is the House Republicans that are driving this car toward the cliff, again, just to play more partisan games once again. As I've said, we could have had $4 trillion in deficit relief, but Congressman Duffy and others wanted to protect every dime of tax cuts for the top 1% in the country.
And we asked Kreitlow's opponent, Sean Duffy, why he signed the pledge against raising taxes by conservative activist Grover Norquist, and whether signing that pledge was in the best interest of his congressional district.
And raising taxes, as Bill Clinton and Barack Obama have said, isn't going to create that growth.
Did you have to sign a pledge from this private individual? Couldn't you have said, listen, Grover, you little man, get out of my office. I'm a congressman. I'm not going to sign any pledges except pledges to the people of the 7th Congressional District.
If I had to do it again, I wouldn't have signed the pledge. But I had told everyone here what I thought about taxes.
Republican Sean Duffy and Democrat Pat Kreitlow would meet in a Wisconsin public radio debate before a live audience in Wausau. The exchange became heated over the subject of abortion rights and whether Duffy's pro-life position should include an exception for rape victims.
For me, I believe that life begins at conception and it goes until natural death. And I believe that we protect life at conception.
Congressman Duffy, you talked about respecting our ideas. I believe we need a congressman who will respect women and make sure that they don't face government coming between them and their doctor. And we don't deserve to have a congressman who one of the first bills he signed on to would redefine rape. We don't need that.
I prosecuted rape cases. I heard the stories of women and children who had been raped. And as I was working to put those rapists behind bars, you might have read a teleprompter to tell the people in your community about it. So don't talk to me about rape.
In one of the most expensive congressional races in the country, Sean Duffy defeated Pat Kreitlow to win a second term in the House of Representatives. We caught up with both of the candidates as the returns came in on election night. The Republican crowd in Wausau had already watched President Obama and Tammy Baldwin sweep Wisconsin. Sean Duffy finally gave them something to cheer about.
This was one of the top targeted seats in the country. Nancy Pelosi told us that for her to win back her speakership, she was going to drive right through central Wisconsin.
Across town at the Wausau Labor Temple, a Democratic crowd already stoked by the president's victory welcomed Pat Kreitlow as a hero.
Stay strong, stay hungry, stay in love with this country and with this beautiful part of the country, and know that my gratitude knows no bounds for this amazing adventure you've shared with me tonight.
Thank you, Pat.
To the Democrats, this was supposed to be their district, held for 41 years by Dave Obie. But Obie says it's not the same district that made him one of the most powerful men in Washington, thanks to a new Republican map.
When you take out a county like Portage County and Wisconsin Rapids, and then you put in St. Croix, when people look at that map, it makes it that much harder to get people to believe you can actually win.
Sean Duffy defeated Pat Kreitlow by a margin of 59 to 41%. More than $7 million was spent on the race. In Wausau, I'm Glenn Moberg for Wisconsin Public Radio News.
A political and environmental issue also took center stage in Wisconsin, the successful move to reinstate a wolf hunt. At a hearing in Stevens Point, the issue brought out passionate arguments both for and against the hunt, from speakers that included Bob Welch of the Hunter's Rights Coalition, Howard Goldman of the Humane Society, Gary Besaw of the Menominee Tribe, and livestock owner Annette Olson.
To walk upon the tortured carcass of a newborn calf, with its mother still circling it, nudging it, it is a scene that infuriates a farmer.
This is one of the reasons why the Menominee are opposed to wolf hunting. Because in effect, we're saying we're going to go out there and hunt our brothers and our sisters.
What's the rush? Wolves are a public trust. They don't belong to consumptive users. They belong to all of the citizens of the state. In fact, they belong to themselves.
Hunters are going to become, I believe, some of the strongest advocates for wolves in the state because they'll become a trophy species and they will want to see them continue. That is how it's worked with every other species.
And we heard a political message mixed with music in the weeks before the election, as we welcomed author, songwriter, and philosopher Peter Buffett to Route 51 before an appearance at a Community Foundation event in Wausau. Buffett, the son of billionaire financier Warren Buffett, writes music to increase awareness of the poorest and most desperate people in the world.
Since I started to sing in 2005, and I suddenly discovered that I could start to put lyrics, you know, in my music.
That's a whole different dimension, you know.
Yeah, totally new dimension, and really took the music to a different place. And I'm now writing, really almost all of my songs have an element of social or political or, you know, some sort of message in there.
Thousands of dangerous killers, schooled in the methods of murder, are now spread throughout the world like ticking time bombs set to go off.
Nobody ever sold you.
You may feel hopeless.
You would ask for more.
I feel lonely and anxious.
I'm Glenn Moberg. When the Route 51 year-end review show returns, we'll visit with more of the exceptional and thought-provoking guests that made the year 2012 one for the history books in North Central Wisconsin.
Support for WPR comes from Rely Local Wausau, building the local economy and strengthening the community by making local business everybody's business. More about locally owned and operated businesses at relylocal.com.
I'm Glenn Moberg, and this is the Route 51 2012 Year-End Review Show. Edgar, Wisconsin may seem like an unlikely place to attract some of the great figures of world history. But it was again this year thanks to a local history teacher, Colin Hansen, who brought the legendary Tuskegee Airmen to his school and then to Route 51. We also featured them in a story for the statewide Wisconsin Public Radio Network.
Bandits! Hundreds of them! 6 o'clock!
The George Lucas movie Red Tails dramatizes the story of the Tuskegee Airmen who integrated the skies and helped America win the Second World War.
We have a right to fight for our country the same as every other American.
And with the blockbuster film still showing on the big screen, 92-year-old Dr. Welton Taylor and 91-year-old Virgil Poole are welcomed with open arms at a small high school in the central Wisconsin village of Edgar, far removed from the battlefields of the war and from their personal battle with segregation.
We want to prove to the world that God didn't create us unequal from any other human on the earth.
The rule was, don't make any black heroes. What's going to happen when they go back to Mississippi, Alabama, Georgia? They're going to be troublemakers.
Virgil Poole was stationed in Italy.
We can fight and we can win and we can fly. We dropped bombs down destroyers. A lot of things we did, but we did them to win the war.
The Tuskegee Airmen weren't the only bit of living history to come to Edgar. Teacher Colin Hansen also brought author Luong Ung to the community and to Route 51 to talk about her survival of one of the world's worst episodes of genocide in her native Cambodia. Her book is called First, They Killed My Father.
They asked for my father by his real name, so we knew we were in danger. My father talked to my mother and she started crying. One by one, he picked up my siblings in his arms and just held us. I was 7 years old and I did not want to believe it. Parts of my body were so emaciated that I could see the bones, the outlines of fingers and knuckles and cheekbones. I was skin and a big stomach. We are all much stronger than we think. And whether it's Hmong or Cambodia or Vietnam, it's possible to reclaim your light.
genocide survivor Luong Ung on Route 51. There was a third inspirational historical figure who appeared before Edgar school children this year, Herbert Seward, one of the legendary Band of Brothers, immortalized in the HBO television series of the same name. The members of Easy Company of the 101st Airborne Division were made famous by the HBO miniseries Band of Brothers.
Hey, kid, what's your name again?
Seward.
You got any ammo, Junior?
The real Herbert Seward, nicknamed Junior, brought his message to a packed auditorium of students in the small town of Edgar, Wisconsin. He didn't sugarcoat the horror of war.
The guy's brains were in our water supply. That was what we had to have for water for that day.
Away from the auditorium, Herbert Seward Jr. recalled a firefight in which 42 German soldiers were killed.
But I ended up burying one of those kids. And he was about 16 years old, blonde hair, blue-eyed. And I looked down at him and I thought, you know, his mother and dad are going to wonder what happened to him.
Another of Route 51's extraordinary guests was Michael Perry, an author, a musician, a humorist, a philosopher, an emergency medical technician, and a farmer who visited with us before an appearance in Stevens Point. We asked Perry about how good people could bridge the political divide in our state and our nation.
These are difficult issues that require you to sit on your neighbor's porch for hours. You know, I've got a guy down the road from me where I live in the country, and he and I suspect... have not covered a lot of the same side of the ballot in over the years.
Mm-hmm.
But you know what? His heart is failing him. And so he's had some issues. And so last summer he needed help bailing hay. So I helped him bail hay. And the reason I did that is because when I was off on book tour and didn't get my plowing done, he came up and plowed for me and helped my wife get the field ready. I'm not trying to be evasive, nor am I trying to be Pollyanna, but at some level, you got to live together and you got to work together.
Author Michael Perry on Route 51. We welcomed another groundbreaking author to Route 51, Charles Schoenfeld, whose book, A Funny Thing Happened on My Way to the Dementia Ward, detailed his experiences as a male nursing assistant caring for Alzheimer's patients in Wausau. Schoenfeld described for us how he staged a deer hunt inside the ward for three elderly men.
Blaze orange hats, deer antlers for rattling. I had doe bleats and buck grunts, and I brought the life-size deer decoy, some rope, some binoculars. We held a hunt right there, and we happened to get lucky, and we got a nice buck that day. Dragging a deer out of the woods is hard work. And I asked Eddie, I had put the rope around the deer's neck, and I said, Eddie, will you help me drag him out? And he took a long, deep breath, a lot of thought process going on there, and finally said to me, well, let's get it over with. It's hard to fathom the damage this disease will do to a person. It shuts you down. You won't be able to swallow. Your brain can't figure out how to tell your throat how to swallow food, and you will eventually just curl up and basically go back into the womb.
Charles Schoenfeld's book on Alzheimer's has been added to the curriculum at North Central Technical College and other schools. As we do every year, we took our road show on the road, in this case to Wausau's Lee Yawkey Woodson Art Museum, as they unveiled a display of strikingly realistic botanical art paintings. At an appearance before a live audience at the museum, we talked to collector Isaac Sutton, who said botanical art is enjoying a renaissance, in part, he said, because of global climate change.
Late 20th century, we've had a boom in botanical artists, and now they're everywhere, in every country.
What do you think is the reason for this renaissance of what is really finely detailed natural art, so much unlike the impressionism of the 19th century and the cubism of the early 20th century and the
Jackson
abstract
Pollock.
Art of Jackson
yeah,
Pollock? If you're right and there are more and more people producing this kind of artwork, why the renaissance? What's the cause of it?
It's the environment, stupid, you know?
Explain that.
It's all around us. I mean, you know, the world, it's getting hotter here in Wisconsin. It's getting hotter in New York. The planet's warming, whether it's politically correct to say it or not. We're facing a crisis, and people are finally starting to realize this. And people are saying, yes, the environment is important to us. And the way you express it is through art.
botanical art collector Isaac Sutton at a live Route 51 event at Wausau's Woodson Art Museum. The subject of climate change was the focus of another of our shows, this one with Francis Moore LePay, the author of Diet for a Small Planet, and the keynote speaker at this year's Midwest Renewable Energy Fair in central Wisconsin. LePay asked environmentalists to change the way that they talk about the issue.
That reflects a fear mentality when you just don't want to hear the truth because it's too scary. And I think we as environmentalists have a responsibility to make sure that we're not feeding the fear that causes people to close their ears. The phrase, we've hit the limits of a finite planet. In energy, for example, the sun supplies us 15,000 times a daily dose of energy compared to what we're currently using in fossil fuel. There is enough, more than enough.
Francis Moore LePay, author of Diet for a Small Planet, and again the keynote speaker at this year's Midwest Renewable Energy Fair in Custer, east of Stevens Point. The changing climate had a devastating effect on north-central Wisconsin this year. A summer-long drought destroyed our corn crop and hurt our dairy farmers, and almost dried up, once again, a trout stream, the Little Plover River. Unseasonably warm weather in January took place, and then in March, more unseasonably warm weather devastated our winter tourism economy. But there was this freak leap day snowstorm. 78-year-old Wilmer Krieger and his 76-year-old wife Audrey are shoveling a mountain of wet, heavy snow by hand in front of their mailbox on a Merrill, Wisconsin country road.
I don't like it. I was happy the way it was. Whoever ordered this, I don't like him.
Krieger at least appreciates the exercise.
When I can't handle it anymore, then I'll get a snowblower. It's good for the body to shovel. Hopefully I'll do it next year again.
The Leap Day storm dropped about a foot of slushy snow on this part of the North Woods, closing schools and making driving treacherous. But not everybody is upset by the late season gift.
I don't know what it's called, but I wrecked my snowmobile.
At the snow shack in Merrill, Michael Hafner of Rothschild picks up a part to get his rig running again so he can finally get out on the trails.
I love it. It's making me itch to get out snowmobiling.
Snow Shack owner David Blaze says Hafner's enthusiasm is shared by his other customers.
Oh, ecstatic. You know, everybody's just chomping at the bit to get out there.
But for Blaze, whose business depends on the weather, the Leap Day snowfall comes too late in the season.
Well, it's been really crappy all year up until this last little hurrah. It's just kind of a little Band-Aid on a bad year.
And let's move now from the cold, snowy North Woods to the hot, sultry climate of New Orleans. In one of our live music shows, we welcomed back the Sid Kyler Jazz Band with Sid on trumpet, Louis Pratt on clarinet, our special guest John Greiner on soprano sax, Roger Pickering on bass, and yours truly on guitar and vocals as we performed St. James Infirmary Blues.
Thank you.
I'm Glenn Moberg. When the Route 51 year-end review show continues, we'll look at some of the big economic developments in north central Wisconsin after this short message.
Support for Wisconsin Public Radio comes from UMR, a United Healthcare company providing employee benefits administration, integrated health management, and pharmacy benefits administration for self-funded employers throughout the U.S. More about UMR at umr.com.
Welcome back to the Route 51 2012 year-end review show. There were some important developments for the regional economy this year, including some great news in the small community of Abbotsford, where a local man found a way to buy a hometown factory before it was shut down, and in the process, he saved more than 50 local jobs. Dan Hanula walks the floor of the Abbotsford factory that's been his second home since 1976.
All of our product comes in on the north end of the building here, and we have basically three production lines that run the length of the plant.
Women sit behind row after row of humming sewing machines and cut fabric as it rolls out of industrial quilters. They're making draperies, bedspreads, and pillowcases for hospitals and the biggest hotel chains in the world.
Days Inn, Super 8, Howard Johnson, Travelodge, Knights Inn, Ramadas, Wingates, Wyndham, Hawthorne Suites, Hyatt, Hilton, the Holiday Inn people.
And Dan Hanula says they do a lot of business.
200 properties a month. It's a lot of drapery, a lot of bedspreads.
The women who work here say they love their jobs. Julia Westrick says it's creative work.
You do the fancy draperies you see in windows, you know, that look so lovely, and it makes you feel proud when you get through doing it.
Julia has been working here for 16 years. She was here when the economy collapsed, and Dan Hanula worked overtime to keep them in business.
When we were really low, when the bottom dropped out of our industry, he was out on the road hunting up work for us to keep us going.
I didn't realize fully how nervous they were about losing their jobs. We're overwhelmed by the amount of support that we got from the state and the region and the city of Abbotsford. They said they weren't going to let these 50-some jobs go. They were not going to let them go. And we got it done.
And in Stevens Point, they got it done. There was big economic development news as the city went ahead with an ambitious downtown redevelopment plan, tearing down the old mall and creating a new campus for Mid-State Technical College. It only happened after a deal was reached to resolve a court battle between Mayor Andrew Halverson and mall owner and bank senior vice president Steve Janney.
It's been a very trying time for both parties, both the bank and for the city and for all of the people of Stevens Point. And I can just say that there's absolutely no animosity. It was all business. We have no bad feelings towards the city or the government of Stevens Point and wish them all well in the future.
This was probably a settlement that was equally painful for both sides, which means it's probably an appropriate legal settlement. But most importantly for the city, it gives us certainty so we can move forward with really one of the best revitalization opportunities we've had for our city in a very long time.
As Mid-State Technical College moves into downtown Stevens Point, plans were announced for the Medical College of Wisconsin to move a campus into the city of Wausau. It was the subject of a Route 51 show featuring UW-Stevens Point Chancellor Bernie Patterson, North Central Technical College President Lori Wires, Marshfield Clinic President Brian Ewart, UW-Marathon County Dean Keith Montgomery, and Medical College of Wisconsin President John Raymond.
There's a big research component at the medical college, as there is here. Matter of fact, we've already sent practically a busload of faculty and staff to Milwaukee to meet with their faculty and staff to begin the collaboration 2 months ago.
We will be able to simulate a natural disaster and be able to bring the medical students in along with our students, paramedics, EMT, our nurses, our surge techs, so that if it would ever happen in real life, they would be prepared to handle it.
We've been around since 1916, and we've been educating doctors for 80 of those 96 years because we recognize that where physicians train is a strong predictor of where they will practice.
I mean, you can't always draw a line from the present into the future, but the more you have in the present, the more possibilities there's going to be in the future. And just as it can spark interest in education, I think this could spark the interest of entrepreneurs as well.
There's the opportunity to bring in other programs, and they wouldn't necessarily all need to be owned by the Medical College of Wisconsin. We're up to helping maximize those possibilities, and we're honored to be part of the Central Wisconsin community.
John Raymond of the Medical College of Wisconsin, Keith Montgomery of UW-Marathon County, Brian Ewart of Marshfield Clinic, Lori Wires of North Central Technical College, and Bernie Patterson of UW-Stevens Point, talking about that new medical college campus for Wausau. When the college comes to the area, it will be served by regional bus service. In another big economic development story, the village of Weston agreed to restore bus service to the southern part of the metro area after cutting it because of budget concerns. The long fight to restore it was led by Father Stephen Bryce, who appeared on Route 51 shortly after it was announced that he would be transferred out of St. Anne's in Wausau to a different parish.
The next thing I know, I'm invited to transport four bus riders to a meeting in Weston at the Village Municipal Center. I'm sitting in the van, and I'm listening to these four ladies talk, three of them visually impaired, one of them handicapped. And they were excited that they were going to have a voice in public. They were so thrilled that they felt somebody was finally going to listen to them or be concerned about their interest. And I caught the fever. I said, this is a remarkable thing going on here, that this organization, this process is giving voice to the voiceless, giving face to the faceless.
Father Stephen Bryce, one of the leaders of the local social justice group NAOMI that helped bring regional bus service back to the Wausau area. A surprise economic development story has affected a Wisconsin institution, Weinbrenner Shoes. With union factories in Merrill and Marshfield, they're one of the last American shoe manufacturers, and they find themselves inundated with orders from around the world because their traditional work boots have become an international fashion hit right before the Christmas season. We spoke with Weinbrenner president Pat Miner.
Just a couple of us now still left making shoes in the United States, and it's becoming a lost art.
On the factory floor in Merrill, skilled cobblers practice this lost art, hammering, buffing, and sewing tiny American flags onto the shoes as a source of pride for a product known in the industry as occupational footwear.
Shoes that are all either black or brown. Work boots, fire boots, police boots, postal uniform, military.
Only 2% of the shoes sold in America are actually made in America, which makes Weinbrenner's success so surprising. Pat Miner says their basic work boots have become a fashion statement for young hipsters around the globe.
This 6-inch mock-toed white wedge shoe has become very popular all over the world. We're selling it in Japan. We're selling it in Korea. China, believe it or not, is actually coming to us for footwear.
Pat Miner, the president of Weinbrenner Shoes of Merrill and Marshfield. Another success story just a few blocks from the Merrill Shoe Factory is the Cosmo Theater in downtown Merrill, an old-fashioned mom-and-pop movie house that held a Christmas food drive and managed to survive more than 80 years in business at the same location and also survive an invasion by giant spiders. The Cosmo Theater in downtown Merrill has been showing movies since 1929. It is still family-owned.
I can take it from you right here. Go right down the hall, first door on your left.
Co-owner Shelby Zwankowski takes a can of soup for the holiday food drive.
Cosmo's a very special place. We know most of our customers by name. It really isn't just a movie, it's an experience.
Shelby's father, Dennis Lurch, stands behind the counter making popcorn.
I'm much better at selling tickets than I am making popcorn.
Dennis looks at the long line of customers.
It's amazing how many people are here right now that either they were in the original movie or their parents were in the movie.
The movie is an early 70s cult classic, The Giant Spider Invasion, filmed in Merrill, with a final scene shot right in front of the Cosmo. Russ Yonda was 16 when the spider ate him on Main Street.
There's 8 people inside the spider, and 2 are pouring blood down the fangs, which have a garden hose taped on each side, basically Carol Serpent red food coloring. Very sticky in the summer.
The guest of honor tonight is Bill Rabane, who produced the movie and turned an old Volkswagen Beetle into a different kind of bug.
6 or 7 kids inside. Legs were fixed to springs and they kept moving up and down as the driver drove the VW.
The Giant Spider Invasion grossed more than $20 million. Rabane produced it on a shoestring.
Total budget was $300,000.
How much did you make off of it?
Not a friggin' dime.
But Bill Rabane says he had fun.
Sometimes the only way I know you're still alive is when I hear you flush the toilet.
Inside, the audience is also having fun, laughing as they see themselves and their friends back on the big screen. Norman and Alice Dimke say the Cosmo has been part of their lives.
We've been going here, oh man, from when our kids were little.
The kids were born in 58 and 60, so, you know, we've been coming a lot of years.
Coming to a place where the people watching the movie are the real stars. In Merrill, I'm Glenn Mobert for Wisconsin Public Radio News. And if the Cosmo Theater survived a giant spider invasion, the community of Rhinelander not only survived but welcomed national attention to a local monster of another kind. The legendary Hodag was featured in an episode of a children's cartoon show, Scooby-Doo and the Hodag of Horror. The mythical Hodag, monster of Wisconsin's North Woods, appears as a menacing creature with bright yellow eyes and two long fangs in a new episode of the Scooby-Doo cartoon series. And Lara Reed is ecstatic.
I kind of thought, oh my gosh, this is really cool. Is this the real Hodag? It looks exactly like our beloved mascot here in Rhinelander.
Reed is the executive director of the city's Chamber of Commerce.
When you hear Hodag, you think Rhinelander. And when you think Rhinelander, you think Hodag.
And the cartoon features a real historical character, Rhinelander showman Eugene Shepherd, who created the Hodag and popularized Paul Bunyan back in the 1800s.
I, Gene Shepherd, from the primitive wilds of Wisconsin, I give you the Hodag of Horror!
Come on, Scoob. This place is a ripoff.
Why would the producers of Scooby-Doo choose the Hodag as its monster? Reed thinks she knows.
The Hodag's favorite food is white bulldogs, and while Scooby-Doo might not be a white bulldog, he is a dog.
As Scooby-Doo would say, the Hodag of Horror episode has already aired in Great Britain and is scheduled to air in the U.S. sometime in August. I'm Glenn Mobert for Wisconsin Public Radio News. Route 51 welcomed musical guests the Yama Ensemble from Israel, a group of talented musicians playing traditional instruments, some of which go back thousands of years. The Yama Ensemble performed this traditional Bulgarian love song live in our Wisconsin Public Radio studios.
Mesechenka, Izraelai, Mesechenka,
Izraelai, Mesechenka, Izraelai, Mesechenka, Aliana, Aliana, Portugaliana, Blaga Dushka, Medena, Shikeriana, Aliana, Aliana, Portugaliana, Blaga Dushka, Medena, Shikeriana.
I'm Glenn Mobert. The Route 51 2012 year-end review show continues after this short break.
Support for WPR comes from Rely Local Wausau, building the local economy and strengthening the community by making local business everybody's business. More about locally owned and operated businesses at relylocal.com.
I'm Glenn Mobrig, and this is the Route 51 2012 year-end review show. In August, after a neo-Nazi gunman shot up a Sikh temple in Wisconsin, we explored the link between heavy metal hate music and the crime. Among our guests, Tom Jordan of the blues rock band Mean Tooth Grin, performing his version of the old gospel song, John the Revelator. And this music, it has a very strong Christian influence, obviously, a song about the Book of Revelations.
Yeah, well, a lot of old blues music has a lot of very religious elements, and what people sometimes forget is that you can't have, you know, God without the devil.
Tom Jordan of the Central Wisconsin rock band Mean Tooth Grin. We lost a number of great community leaders in the past year, one of them a colleague and a friend of mine, Jim Lawrence, an accomplished labor historian, a prolific author, a professor here at UW-Marathon County, and a gentleman with a fierce devotion to economic fairness.
The answer to this problem, it seems to me, is to try to argue in favor of fair trade rather than free trade, try to encourage the same type of protections for workers on a worldwide basis. Capitalism is a wonderful economic system and machine. It's not necessarily a moral system. Without some kind of structure or framework of governmental controls, it's possible for workers to be abused.
The late labor historian, Professor Jim Lawrence of UW-Marathon County. This year, we also lost a longtime legislator, a businessman, and a North Central Wisconsin political leader in Roger Breske, a moderate Democrat who served as state senator for many years in northern Wisconsin's 29th Senate District. Here he is, remembered by former State Senator Jim Holprin and former Congressman Dave Obey.
Roger's days as a tavern owner and a tavern legal official gave him a network of support, but taverns are small businesses, and I think Roger understood it was small business that needed and deserved his help as a legislator.
He was absolutely the best street campaigner I've ever known in my life. He enjoyed meeting people. People liked him because they knew that he liked them, and that is a big asset in politics.
Dave Obey and Jim Holperin talking about the late Roger Breske. And in one of our most tragic losses, we lost a firefighter and a father, 34-year-old Jamison Campmeyer, a volunteer with the Colby Fire Department and a Marathon County Sheriff's Deputy. Colby Fire Chief Ross Renault reflected on the community's loss.
Law enforcement and firefighters historically across the country in a time of need, whether it be a natural disaster or a tragedy like this, it's just remarkable how they band together to help each other out. He dedicated his life to helping other people as a law enforcement officer, as a firefighter, and as an EMT. He was totally dedicated to it. It's a tragic loss for a number of families and the community. It's going to take a long time to get over this one.
Firefighter Jamison Campmeyer leaves behind a wife and three children. Route 51 also reflected on the true meaning of Christmas this year as we welcomed a group of ministry volunteers who work with the Marathon County jail population. In a program on faith and the criminal justice system, we talked about the toll this time, that this time of the year takes on those who are behind bars, but also the toll it takes on those who try to help them.
It was Christmas in prison.
Ray Slatton is the director of Greater Wausau Christian Services and the jail chaplain for Marathon County.
I think the emotional aspect of it becomes greater during this time of the year. Because this is not a job where you just go in and flip a switch on. You're dealing with a lot of people, with a lot of emotions, a lot of loss, a lot of grief.
Reverend Slatton and his team of volunteers are working hard, buying, wrapping, and delivering gifts for more than 80 children of the prisoners they serve. Rita Jerichovic says most of them lack basic literacy skills.
So many of them could not even read, and if they could read, they could not comprehend what they were reading. They lack self-esteem. When you go into the jail to teach or help anybody, you got to see good in all of them.
Another volunteer, Sally Cinto Reinertsen, says most of the prisoners never got many Christmas gifts themselves.
We dispose of people. We push them to the side. The wealthy are in one area and the poor in the other. When I teach in jail, I often will wear an orange sweater because they're in orange jumpsuits. So they see that we're all equal.
The message of Christian equality is one that Reverend Slatton shares with a simple question.
How many inmates are in this room? And they start counting. They say, stop counting. There are no inmates. There are people. People say, you know, until you said that, I didn't really see light at the end of the tunnel.
It's Christmas in prison.
And seeing the light can be harder than it should be this time of the year.
I'll probably get homesick. I love you. Good night.
In Wausau, I'm Glenn Mobert for Wisconsin Public Radio News. And as we always do each year, we welcomed our friends from the South Beach Chamber Ensemble back to Central Wisconsin. The musical ensemble led by cellist and Wausau native Michael Andrews. They travel up to the Wausau area to Central Wisconsin from Florida every summer. Wisconsin Public Radio always sponsors them and their shows in the area. And they always perform live music on Route 51 in our Wausau studios. Among this year's special selections, Jay Unger's theme to the Ken Burns documentary, The Civil War, Michael Andrews and the South Beach Chamber Ensemble.
¶¶
the South Beach Chamber Ensemble, live on Route 51 Regional Talk Radio. I'm Glenn Moberg. It has been an incredible year for us at Route 51. Thanks for allowing us to share this past hour with you. Thanks to our executive producer, Rick Ryer, our on-air producers, Jane Ritger and Crystal Waters. Thanks also to Wisconsin Public Radio news director, Michael Leland. Thanks to John Altenberg for the Route 51 theme. Special music today by the South Beach Chamber Ensemble, the Sid Kyler Dixieland Jazz Band with John Greiner, and the Yama Ensemble. Have a happy and safe new year. We will be back with you next Thursday at 5 for the first show of the year 2013. Thanks for riding along with us today and all through the past year. Forward, as we say in Wisconsin, and until next week and next year, we're heading out of town.